The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are tackling probably the single most irritating and persistent cognitive thing we all face. That moment, your memory just lets you down.
Oh, absolutely. You walk into a meeting, the crucial word vanishes, or you bump into someone you know perfectly well.
And their name just evaporates. It's so frustrating.
It really is. And what's worse, I think, is we tend to frame those failures as some kind of personal flaw, like we're getting older or we're somehow just not sharp enough.
Right. We spend so much energy wishing our brain worked like a perfect video recorder. But our mission today is to dive deep into the work of Daniel Schachter. He's a Harvard psychologist, and his really revolutionary book, The Seven Sins of Memory. Mm-hmm. We're going to explore this pretty stunning idea that these memory failures aren't bugs at all. They're actually features of a, well, highly optimized system.
And that perspective just changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Schachter gives us this sophisticated framework. It helps us understand memory not as some flawed recording device, but as a reconstructive process, mm-hmm. one that's optimized for survival and, crucially, for planning the future.
Yeah.
Understanding these seven sins, it fundamentally challenges our whole relationship with our own minds.
Okay, so let's unpack who the architect behind this concept actually is. Daniel L. Schachter. You said he's not just commenting on the field. You called him a giant in memory science.
Absolutely. He is. He's a distinguished professor of psychology at Harvard, known globally as probably the leading authority on human memory and amnesia. When he writes about memory, you know, he's writing from the absolute front lines of discovery.
And he brings such empirical heft, right? A PhD in experimental psychology, something like over 300 scientific articles published. He's bridging these complex, long-standing clinical cases, like patients with severe amnesia.
Mm-hmm. Like the famous case of HM.
Exactly. And connecting that with cutting-edge cognitive neuroscience, using tools like fMRI and PE scans to actually see how the brain rebuilds events.
Yeah. And what's really distinctive about his perspective, I think, is how he synthesizes all this incredibly complex lab research into something that's accessible.
Yeah.
And, you know, immediately useful. He gives us this comprehensive, coherent explanation for why our memories act the way they do.
And connects it all back to adaptation and evolution.
Exactly.
So his central thesis is just really powerful. Memory's apparent failures, not random, they are systematic, predictable, and they actually serve important psychological and survival functions.
Right.
They're the inevitable costs we pay for having these otherwise beneficial memory characteristics.
Where?
The system kind of sacrifices perfect historical accuracy for speed and flexibility?
That's it, exactly. We're paying a price for efficiency, but Schachter argues it's a price well worth paying. And to categorize these predictable costs, he organized them into seven specific types. He calls them the sins, drawing that metaphor from medieval tradition.
Right, the seven deadly sins, but for memory. And he groups them pretty elegantly, too. First, you have the sins of omission. That's when we genuinely forget something entirely.
Yeah, the information is just gone or inaccessible.
And that includes transience, absent-mindedness, and blocking.
And then we shift gears into the sins of commission. These are maybe more insidious because the memory is actually there, but it's distorted or just plain wrong. That group includes misattribution, suggestibility, and bias.
And then finally, there's that one singular sin of unwanted recall, persistence.
Mm-hmm.
Schachter's ambition here seems pretty clear. He wants to shift our whole cultural perspective away from seeing memory as just a weak tape recorder.
Yeah, flawed hardware.
Towards seeing it as this incredibly sophisticated system that's optimized for planning, for prediction, for future success, really.
So should we dive into the sins themselves? Maybe start with the most common one, transience.
Yeah, let's do it. Transience. This is just the simple fading of memory over time, right?
Pretty much. We see this in Hermann Ebbinghaus's classic research back in the 19th century. He established the forgetting curve.
Right, where you lose information really rapidly at first, and then the rate of forgetting slows down over time. But if transience is just fading, why is that a feature? What's the adaptive advantage? What problem is the brain solving?
Well, the problem is essentially clutter. Imagine if you remembered every single detail of every day, every insignificant conversation, every place you ever parked your car for the last 20 years, your mind would be completely paralyzed.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Cognitive overload.
Exactly. Transience is the brain's way of prioritizing current, relevant information. It lets those unused, likely unimportant details decay. It's necessary cognitive house cleaning, really.
Which actually leads quite nicely into the second sin, doesn't it? Absent-mindedness. This isn't memory decay like transience. This is more about a failure of attention, right? Leading to poor encoding in the first place, or maybe trouble retrieving it later.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. It's a memory that maybe never really stuck properly because your attention was elsewhere. We've all been there.
Right.
Did I lock the car door? Where did I put my keys just now?
Oh, constantly.
Your mind was probably engaged in something else, planning your day, thinking about a problem, maybe even just daydreaming while your body was performing some routine task on autopilot.
Mm-hmm.
The information just didn't get encoded deeply.
I always think of that hilarious but also kind of terrifying example. Schachter uses the world-renowned cellist Yo-Yo Ma.
Oh, the cello in the taxi.
Yes, he once left his priceless multi-million dollar cello, literally the tool of his entire career, in the trunk of a New York City taxi.
And that's just the perfect illustration, isn't it? If someone that intelligent, that focused, that brilliant can be absent-minded about something so critical,
yeah,
it proves this sin is basically the cost we pay for our ability to engage in deep, abstract thought. We have to prioritize our internal processing sometimes over just constantly monitoring our surroundings.
Okay, that makes sense. So sin number three, blocking. This is that intensely frustrating tip of the tongue feeling.
Yes.
You know the memory's in there. You can almost feel it, but you just can't retrieve it. The answer is like right behind some kind of mental barrier.
And the mechanism seems to be competition. The memory is stored. It's there. But the pathway to retrieve it is temporarily obstructed, often by a similar but incorrect memory.
The ugly sister effect.
That's what some researchers call it, yeah. That wrong answer keeps popping up and blocking the right one.
So blocking is essentially the downside of having such a highly interconnected associative memory network. Our memories are so good at linking related things.
Yeah, which is usually a huge advantage.
But sometimes too many similar items compete for attention and kind of jam the circuit.
That seems to be the idea. It's the price we pay for that incredibly flexible associative recall.
Okay, so those are the sins of omission. Now we cross over into the sins of commission, where the problem isn't forgetting, it's, well, getting it wrong, distortion.
Exactly. And sin number four is misattribution. This is where you remember the fact or the piece of information, but you assign it to the wrong source, or the wrong time, or the wrong place.
Right. And this one can have really catastrophic real-world consequences. I'm thinking of that case Schachter details, the psychologist Donald Thompson.
Oh, yeah, that's a chilling example.
He was falsely accused of a very serious crime, basically because the victim had seen him being interviewed on television shortly before her attack.
She accurately remembered his face. The content of the memory was correct. But she misattributed the source. She mixed up the context of seeing his face on TV with the context of her attacker.
Wow.
It shows how our memory system often separates the what from the where and when. And that separation, while maybe efficient most of the time, can lead to really serious errors in what psychologists call source monitoring.
Which leads directly to sin five, suggestibility. This sounds like misattribution, but amplified by external information, maybe misleading information.
That's a good way to put it. This is where the groundbreaking work of Elizabeth Loftus on eyewitness memory really comes into play. She showed, pretty definitively, that memories can be altered after the event, retroactively.
Right, those famous experiments about car accidents.
Exactly, the misinformation effect. If subjects watched a film of a car accident and were asked how fast the cars were going when they smashed into each other,
we reported higher speeds.
And were more likely to falsely remember seeing broken glass later on compared to subjects who were asked the more neutral question, how fast were they going when they hit each other?
So why is our memory so easily swayed by suggestion? Is it just like inherently weak or flawed in that way?
Schachter argues it's not about weakness, but about being designed to update. Memory isn't static. It's inherently flexible. It's designed for integration. If someone provides new information, especially someone we trust, or if a question is phrased in a certain way.
Our system treats it as a plausible update.
Kind of, yeah. It might integrate that new detail, even if it distorts the original memory trace. We seem to be built for adaptive integration, for learning and updating our knowledge, and suggestibility is the flip side, the cost we pay for that flexibility.
That makes me immediately think about sin number six, bias. This is how our current beliefs, our knowledge, our emotional states can actually filter and distort our memories of the past. Why do we let our present selves effectively lie to us about our own history?
Well, again, it's because memory isn't really optimized for objective historical accuracy. It seems to be optimized more for creating a coherent personal narrative and maintaining self-esteem. Biases help us maintain a functional, consistent story about who we are.
Okay.
Shager highlights several types. There's the consistency bias. We tend to remember our past attitudes and beliefs as being more similar to our current ones than they actually were.
Makes sense. And the egocentric bias.
That's where we remember ourselves as being more central or influential in past events than we might have been. We're the star of our own life movie, right?
Yeah.
Naturally. And then there's the classic hindsight bias, the I knew it all along effect after something happened.
Exactly. We look back at past events through the lens of current knowledge and feel like the outcome was obvious or predictable all along.
So if these biases help me maintain my self-esteem, make my life story feel coherent, maybe that slight historical inaccuracy, that little bit of self-deception, is worth the trade-off.
Psychologically, maybe so. It probably helps us function day to day, but Shapter would argue it should definitely instill some serious humility about how certain we can really be about our own recollections, especially about past motivations or feelings or accomplishments.
Good point. Okay, finally, sin number 7, persistence. This is the flip side of forgetting, isn't it? It's the intrusive, unwanted recurrence of memories, particularly emotional ones.
Yes, exactly. This is central to conditions like PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and also often features in depression. It's when you can't forget something you desperately wish you could.
It seems like the ultimate paradox of memory.
It really is. Schechter talks about the neurobiology here. The amygdala, which is the brain's emotional processing center, essentially acts like a kind of superglue for emotionally significant events. It flags them as important and strengthens their encoding and consolidation into long-term memory.
Which makes evolutionary sense, right? If a lion attacks you near a certain waterhole, you absolutely must remember that location and the associated danger for survival.
Precisely. That mechanism evolved to ensure we remember critical threats and opportunities.
But when that system gets stuck in overdrive, maybe after severe trauma, the mechanism itself becomes a source of psychological distress. The memories are too strong, too easily triggered, too intrusive.
Yeah. It really highlights that in many, many cases, remembering more is profoundly not better. Forgetting can be a blessing.
So after cataloging all these magnificent failures, these 7 sins, what are the really big take-home messages? The major insights Schechter provides that we should maybe try to apply in our everyday lives?
Well, I think the first core theme, the absolute foundation, is that memory is an adaptive reconstruction,
yeah,
not a recording device.
Right. It's not a videotape. It's dynamic. It's constantly being rebuilt, filling in gaps, often using our current beliefs or knowledge. It's more like a storyteller.
Exactly. And that brings us back to humility, doesn't it?
Mm.
If you approach any disagreement about a past event, whether it's with a colleague or a partner, understanding that both parties are dealing with reconstructions.
Filtered through their own biases.
Right. And maybe prone to suggestibility or misattribution. It just changes the whole conversation. It shifts it away from who's lying or who's right towards something more like, okay, how might our versions be filtered differently?
That's a really useful shift. Okay, second major theme.
Forgetting is a necessary and healthy function. We're so conditioned culturally to think that forgetting is always bad, a sign of weakness or decline.
Yeah, we prize perfect recall.
But Schechter convincingly argues that sins like transience and blocking are absolutely essential. They prevent cognitive paralysis, that clutter problem we talked about, and they actually enable generalization.
How does forgetting enable generalization?
Well, think about it. To abstract a general rule or concept from lots of different specific experiences, say, learning what a dog is from seeing many different breeds, you actually need to forget some of the unique, irrelevant details of each individual dog you saw. You need to focus on the common features. Forgetting the specifics allows for abstraction.
I see. So you couldn't form concepts without forgetting the trivial details. Okay, that's profound. And the third theme?
Evolutionary trade-offs in cognitive design. This ties it all together. The very flexibility and adaptability that allow us to learn, generalize, reason, plan for the future, basically, our greatest intellectual strengths.
Yeah.
That same flexibility is precisely what makes us susceptible to distortion, to bias, to false memories. The virtues and the sins are two sides of the same coin.
So we accept the cost of occasional errors, like misremembering where we heard a piece of gossip or having that tip of the tongue moment.
For the overwhelming benefit of having a system that's adaptable, efficient, and geared towards navigating the future, not just perfectly recording the past, it's a trade-off inherent in the design.
You know, the way Schechter synthesizes all this research is just incredibly clear. and highly quotable too. He really manages to distill these complex scientific ideas into like single punchy sentences.
He really does. I mean, his central quote basically sums up the entire book. The seven sins are not flaws in the design of human memory, but rather the costs we pay for beneficial features of memory.
That just completely reframes failure, doesn't it? Failure as an inherent trade-off, not a defect.
Exactly. And then regarding the nature of memory itself, he puts it so well. Memory is constructive. We build our memories using both stored information and knowledge, beliefs, and expectations.
Which explains so much about why coherence, making a good story, often seems to win out over perfect accuracy in our personal narratives.
Mm-hmm. And tying back to that paradox of Sin 7, persistence, that quote, "The torment of a persistent traumatic memory is a vivid illustration that remembering more is not always better. Forgetting, in many cases, is a blessing."
Wow, yeah. That one really challenges our cultural obsession with perfect recall, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
So, okay, understanding these sins isn't just theoretical. It gives us a kind of practical user's manual for our own minds, right? How can we apply this?
Definitely. For instance, if we want to combat everyday absent-mindedness, forgetting where we put things.
Yeah.
Schachter suggests using more conscious attention strategies during encoding.
Like actually saying out loud, "I'm putting my keys on the kitchen counter right now."
Exactly. Making the routine action less automatic and more deliberate helps encode it better. And in learning, if you understand transience in that forgetting curve.
You know, you can't just cram information.
Right. You have to use techniques like spaced repetition reviewing material at increasing intervals and self-testing to fight that natural decay and ensure things stick long term.
And thinking broader, on a societal level, the reality of suggestibility and misattribution has huge implications, especially for the legal system.
Oh, enormous. It means that uncorroborated eyewitness testimony has to be treated with extreme caution. It underscores the absolute need for proper, non-leading interview techniques and scientifically informed lineup procedures to minimize the risk of creating false memories or misidentifications.
And what about in just like personal relationships?
Well, I think understanding bias is invaluable there. If you and your partner or a friend have completely different recollections of a past argument or event,
which happens all the time,
realizing that both of you are likely filtering that memory through your own egocentric bias, maybe consistency bias, just to maintain your own narrative, It can foster empathy.
Instead of just getting into an argument about what really happened.
Exactly. It allows you to say, okay, I understand your perspective might be shaped differently by your current feelings or needs, just like mine might be. It opens up a more constructive dialogue.
Thinking back on everything we've discussed, what was most surprising to you, perhaps, from Schachter's work?
You know, for me, it really crystallizes that idea we touched on, that perfect memory would actually be maladaptive. It sounds counterintuitive, but flawlessly remembering every detail would likely interfere massively with our ability to think abstractly, to generalize, to be creative, maybe even to maintain psychological well-being.
Yeah, the clutter problem again, but maybe also an emotional clutter problem with persistence.
Exactly. The sins, in a strange way, are part of what makes us functional, adaptable humans. What about for you?
I think for me, the ultimate insight is the sense of, I don't know, maybe scientific compassion it offers and humility. It gives us this framework, this user's manual, to look at the certainty of our own recollections and the claims others make about their memories with a much healthier, more informed skepticism.
Yeah, skepticism, but also understanding.
Right. It's not about cynicism, but about recognizing the inherent nature of this reconstructive system. It feels like a celebration, almost, of the human mind's beautifully imperfect, but incredibly effective design.
Beautifully imperfect. I like that. It really does reframe how we think about our own lives, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Fascinating deep dive.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.